and teach them that love survives even in war. From my small tent, I write to you with the voice of every mother who endured, every mother who grieved, and every mother who was still, who still dares to dream of peace. While I want Manita to know in this room, we see her, we hear her, and we say, free, free Palestine. Free, free Palestine. Thank you all so much. Continue the fight.
That was Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib speaking at the second annual People's Conference for Palestine held in Detroit, Michigan at the end of August 2025. I plan to air more remarks delivered at that conference during future episodes of Arab Voices. You've been listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the US and Europe since 2002. Our shows are archived online and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
Hi, this is Juan Carlos Ordóñez, host of Policy for the People. Before we get started with today's show, I want to remind you of KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, focusing on our vast community and fighting for our rights. Please go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to become a monthly sustaining member today. Help us reach our fundraising goal of $45,000. And now, on to the show. Welcome to Policy for the People, a show that explores the public policies that can lift up all Oregonians. This show is a collaboration between KMUZ Radio and the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ordóñez. Imagine turning on your phone and finding out through an app that you no longer have a job. For some workers, drivers for Uber and Lyft, this is a distinct possibility. Rideshare drivers report having their accounts suddenly deactivated without explanation, putting on hold their way of earning a living. And deactivation is only one of many challenges that rideshare drivers confront in the workplace. But rideshare drivers have begun to organize and push back. In this episode of Policy for the People, we talk with Nathaniel Hudson Hartman and Joe Jackson, rideshare drivers and organizers with Drivers Union Oregon. They discuss the essential nature of their work, the low pay and lack of protections that come with the job, and how drivers are coming together to demand better working conditions. I began by asking them what Drivers Union Oregon is and how they came to be involved in the organization. And this is how Nathaniel responded.
You know, Joe and I are longtime rideshare drivers. We joke that we have almost 20 years of experience between the two of us. I've been driving for 8 years. Joe's been driving for 10. And, you know, we have connected and been part of building this community of rideshare drivers in our state, which is, you know, no small feat, since we are, it's like, you know, we're, it's like herding cats, you know, we're all kind of in our own little bubbles in our cars. So it's amazing that, you know, rideshare drivers have come together to, you know, build this community. But, you know, we'll obviously talk more about these, but, you know, just like with any job, you know, any career path, you know, we face challenges out there. And so, you know, we really come together over those challenges, but it's not just us, you know, drivers all over the world, have come together to really look at like, hey, what's going on? Why are these things happening? What can we do to make this experience better for everyone, not just for Uber and Lyft? And so back in 2014, I believe, drivers in Washington State came together and said, well, something's not right here. You know, we are driving our cars into the ground. We are 100% responsible for our costs, for, you know, our maintenance and all that stuff. And meanwhile, Uber and Lyft are just taking an unfair and disproportionate percentage of what the riders are paying, when drivers out there are, you know, have the lion's share of the cost and the risk. So what can we do about it? And so drivers came together. Drivers Union Oregon, we are an independent, up and coming, very strong and very galvanized collection. I like to call us a merry band of rideshare drivers, uniting, moving together, and, you know, fighting for, you know, beneficial changes for a more sustainable, more equitable rideshare experience, you know, for Oregonians.
I definitely want to explore the challenges that rideshare drivers are experiencing. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to know a little bit about your experience and how you came to be a rideshare driver. And Joe, I wonder if you can begin by sharing a little bit about your story.
I became a rideshare driver in June of 2015. And, you know, my reasoning for it was I actually lost a very close friend and unfortunately a DUI situation. Somebody had struck the side of the truck that she was riding in, and she died on the scene. So I started driving because I said, hey, you know, if the option is always there for somebody to get home, then there is no reason that a death like this should happen. And really, like, that sort of ignited my passion towards getting people home safely and pushing to, you know, always make sure that somebody is available to get people home. And I've expanded on that from, you know, just being a designated driver to, you know, as rideshare drivers, we're a designated driver, we're an ambulance, you know, we're therapists, we do everything for our passengers. So we are essential, and we love doing what we do.
Nathaniel, do you want to share a little bit?
So I have been almost a lifer in the service industry. I love people. I love being of service to people. So I'm a Western New York native. I moved to Oregon in 2017, and I quickly realized that the cost of living here was much higher than it was in my little city back home. And so when I moved to Oregon, you know, I thought, well, what can I do? You know, because I need to supplement my income. And we didn't have Uber and Lyft back home at the time, but I kept hearing all the radio advertisements, and I was like, yeah, this could be fun. You know, learn the city. You know, make some money. And, you know, I got in and I was hooked. You know, I, like, from the time I got my car registered, started taking rides, I was hooked. You know, I didn't realize what it was until I gave a ride to someone who was just assaulted. And I was their safe ride home. You know, they were in the back seat, they started crying, and I asked them what happened. They had just been assaulted, and they just needed somebody to talk to, and they needed a safe ride home. And that was kind of the moment where it became very clear to me that it wasn't just, we weren't just, you know, giving people rides home from the bar after a night of drinking, which, by the way, is an essential service in and of itself, as Joe mentioned, you know, keeping drunk drivers off of the road. But, you know, bringing people to doctor's appointments, you know, domestic victims of domestic violence, unsheltered folks, you know, that was like my badge of honor. And from that moment forward, I knew that this was just kind of part of God's plan for me to be of service to the community. Driving, no matter what folks say, driving, rideshare driving is not an easy job. You know, it is something that a lot of folks can do, but it is not, you know, we're, as Joe mentioned, we're wearing a lot of hats. There's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of dangers and a lot of risks. It's one of the most dangerous professions there is. And it's one of the professions, you know, that there is, that drivers just have the lack of protections out there.
Let's talk about those challenges that come with the job. What are the main challenges that rideshare drivers face in common that are pretty typical? And Joe, do you want to start us off with your perspective?
Sure. So I think that one of the main challenges of this work versus other work is just the pay and how it's changed over the years. When I first started driving for rideshare, not only was I contractually guaranteed 80% of what the passenger was paying, but it was a fairly good, you know, living wage at the time. And comparatively, gas prices were a bit lower back then, you know, in the like mid $2 to $3 range versus what it is now. Pay since then has more than halved, and our portion is less than half of what the passenger pays. So it's like the cost of the fares have gone up. The cost of living has gone up. The cost of maintenance on your vehicle has gone up, as well as just operating the vehicle. And yet our pay has gone way down. And so one of the biggest challenges is you start out doing this job that's really great. And then you very suddenly, without even realizing it, are working more than full time just to make ends meet.
How long are the hours then that you have to work in order to pay for the essentials? Do you have a sense?
Well, given that I live on the third floor apartment, which carries a slight discount, and I have a roommate, I only have to work roughly about 55 to 60 hours a week.
How about you, Nathaniel? What experiences have you had with regard to the pay structure?
I mean, Joe pretty much laid it out. I mean, we were guaranteed at least 80% of the fare, which is fair considering that we are burdened and shouldered with all of the cost. So the erosion of driver pay is a big one. Couple that with the inflation of rider fares alongside. One of the biggest misconceptions that Uber and Lyft put out there, I'm sure we'll get more into this once we start talking about legislation, is that, you know, rider fares will go up if driver pay goes up. But we have screenshots for days that show that passengers are paying upwards of $90 to $100 per ride, and drivers are earning 13% because of this low pay and the long hours that drivers are working. You know, we're out there not just driving our cars into the ground, but driving ourselves into the ground. But one of the most awful and just reprehensible parts of our experience is what we call deactivation. And this just translates into being fired by an app. And so we are representing drivers in droves, by the hundreds, as a matter of fact, that wake up one day. They get ready for work. They kiss their loved ones goodbye. They go gas up their car. They wash their car. They get ready. They flip on their app, and there's this big red exclamation point that says your account has been put on hold. And this process oftentimes is done by artificial intelligence, by an algorithm that decides that you no longer deserve your job. And there is oftentimes no clear explanation why. And the chat support that you end up texting with to try to get your job back is done 100% in English. So for a driver, you know, and a large percentage of our workforce, you know, our immigrants, folks that maybe English is their second, third, or fourth language, as I'm sure you can imagine, It attracts, and the barrier to entry is very low for those folks. This is just a frustrating and culturally biased process. And even Joe and I mean, you know, we were born here. Our English is fairly decent. We've both been wrongfully deactivated. My story has been pretty well documented by now, but the short of it is, you know, my father passed away. I was out there earning money to try to pay for my ticket home. I was grief-stricken. I had to cancel a trip, and I received a complaint, and I was deactivated. My account was put on hold. I was told I have one chance to appeal. I can submit documentation. I sent them my father's death certificate, which was, you know, let's face it, I didn't have to do that, but I chose to. But I was found to have generically violated their terms of service. And so we have drivers out there that are being deactivated for false complaints, but also from like background checks that are taking too long or app glitches.
Joe, what was your experience when you were deactivated? What happened?
I was deactivated due to a false complaint. I had a passenger who was, you know, yelling out my window and things like that. And when I rolled up my window and I turned on the window lock so they couldn't roll it down and yell at people on the street anymore, they started yelling at me and started telling me that they're going to call Uber and tell them that I was drunk driving. Lo and behold, about 20 minutes after this trip, my account was deactivated. Thankfully, I knew the reason why, so I went and I went into the local police station and did a voluntary breathalyzer, took the printout and sent it to them just preemptively. A lot of drivers don't have the benefit of being able to do that because it doesn't provide you a reason when your account is placed on hold or if you're deactivated. I did so preemptively simply because that's what the passenger was yelling he was going to do, threatening to do. I also sent a picture of my Alcoholics Anonymous token, which was at 7 years at the time. I'm now coming up on 11. It was offensive to me to be accused of drunk driving when I had done so much for myself to never drink again.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Nathaniel Hudson Hartman and Joe Jackson. We're discussing how rideshare drivers in Oregon, drivers for Uber and Lyft, have come together to form Drivers Union Oregon to fight for better working conditions in the industry. Before we get back to the interview, I want to thank everyone who has supported our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, focusing on the community, access to information, and fighting for all underrepresented voices. Visit us at kboo.fm. And while you're there, be sure to click on the donate button. Thanks. And now here is the rest of my conversation with Nathaniel Hudson Hartman and Joe Jackson. For the listeners who may not be aware of the full context here, I mean, getting deactivated and all of a sudden not being able to earn money through rides, there's no UI system for unemployment insurance system for rideshare drivers. There's little in the way of a safety net in the country. Like, what's the economic impact on the driver and their families?
Tremendous. I mean, we have drivers now that have been deactivated that are, you know, in danger of losing their homes because, you know, again, we are incentivized to buy these expensive cars. So you purchase, you know, and especially because the pay is so low, you end up kind of getting into this, you know, this trap of being incentivized to pay to purchase the more expensive car to make more money. And so you end up oftentimes incurring a car note. And so if you get deactivated, there goes your income, there goes your car payment, you know, there, you know, goes your interest. And so the economic injury and hardship that drivers are facing out there, particularly as Joe mentioned, as the expenses have gone up tremendously, can be astronomical.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, Nathaniel, but the other issue, or at least another issue that's prominent, is paid leave, access to paid leave. I wonder if you can talk about why it's so important. Many workers in Oregon now can access paid leave, but rideshare drivers and a lot of gig workers can't. Can you say something about why it's so important? Joe, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll take this one. My son is coming up on a year old, actually, in just about a week and a half, is his first birthday. And last year, right around this time, actually, you know, with my wife being very pregnant and me living in Salem but working in Portland, I was kind of taking risks in going to work because you never know when she's going to go into labor. And so I made the decision to actually stay home and be there so that I can take her to the hospital and be there for the birth of my child so that I can welcome him into the world. But I did so at great risk, without any kind of paid family medical leave. I had no income. And so when I decided to stay home to welcome my child into the world, I was also welcoming him to the potential risk of homelessness. Thankfully, I didn't. A close friend of mine actually covered the rent, and it wasn't until my son was 6 months old that I was able to pay him back for that loan. But it was so awful to have to make a decision like that. And I'm so happy that I made the decision that I did, because welcoming my son into this world is a once in a lifetime experience. And I almost missed it just to pay the bills.
Well, another issue that I've seen the Drivers Union Oregon raise is the issue of transparency. Can you talk about what you mean by transparency in this context and why it's an important factor as well in terms of working conditions?
Absolutely. Thank you, Juan Carlos. And I really appreciate you bringing this up, because look, we know it. The companies, like the companies, TNCs, which, by the way, for those of you listening, TNC stands for Transportation Network Company. That's what Uber and Lyft are considered. So if we talk about TNCs, we're talking about Uber, Lyft, you know, any other rideshare company that operates within our state or, you know, municipality. So yes, the TNCs know it. We know it. Drivers know it. I don't know if the passengers always know it, but passengers and drivers are both getting the short end of the stick at the expense of the TNC. Passengers have oftentimes no idea how much of their fare is going to the driver and how much is not. But if you follow us on TikTok, you know, we post screenshots, and we have folks from all over the world that are like, what? I didn't realize the driver wasn't making most of that, or wow, that passenger paid how much? And, you know, that goes back to how much Uber and Lyft like to, you know, put, you know, a fear monger our lawmakers into thinking that if they vote for a piece of legislation that is going to give drivers more equitable, you know, share of the pay, that the riders aren't going to be able to afford the service. So our consumers deserve and demand transparency. And so, you know, the pay transparency thing is big so that the, you know, our customers are able to make informed decisions and are able to know that there is also fairness and equity in the space.
So you mentioned Senate Bill 1166. This was legislation introduced in the legislative session earlier this year. Can you talk about what this bill would have done, its main provisions, and what happened to the bill?
So this bill would have, first and foremost, established a fair pay standard for drivers. It would have increased the pay from a very low amount in the Portland area, about 70 cents per mile, to a pay that actually matches Washington. For all the drivers watching out there, you know, you're making more money in Washington state because of successful legislation. So when you're driving in Vancouver, you're making $1.34 versus that 70 cents down in Portland. The per minute price would also be going up from its current price. Beyond the fair pay standard, it was also going to include a sick pay benefit, which would automatically accrue based on the passenger's time in the back seat of your car. So you spend 30 hours with a passenger, and you accrue 1 hour of sick pay, and it would just automatically accrue and be very easily accessible, easily redeemable for our drivers who, again, as it's been stated, oftentimes struggle with understanding, you know, programs and other things that might or might not be available. Beyond that, a just cause standard for deactivation cases. So no driver could be deactivated without just cause. And those standards would give arbitrators a tool to use in helping drivers be reactivated in the case of a wrongful deactivation.
There's just a couple things I want to add in terms of what SB 1166 was going to do. You know, in terms of the pay for SB 1166, so we are paid similarly to like a taxi driver, only when we have a passenger in the car and there's a per mile per minute rate. And so, you know, increasing those per mile and per minute rates is representative of that living wage, right? And then the last thing that the bill was going to do was also give the riders and drivers that pay transparency. So that way they would be provided a receipt and show exactly how much the driver's getting versus how much the companies are taking. So I just wanted to mention that last thing about SB 1166.
So what comes next? What does Drivers Union Oregon have planned in terms of moving forward legislation?
We're definitely planning on returning to Salem. You know, we're wanting to come back with, you know, something very similar to what we've tried for. And I think, you know, as far as what happened with SB 1166, it has to do with the enforcement of the rules in the bill. Bureau of Labor and Industries is a pretty underfunded organization. So they needed a few employees to handle our, to handle enforcing our bill and to handle the potential influx of wage complaints, et cetera. And with the financial situation in Oregon, they didn't want to give any money to Bully for a new program.
We are trying to instill in our driver community and really embrace the idea of, you know, controlling the things you can, letting go of the things that you can't. And obviously state funding is not something that any of us have any clout or any juice or, you know, we have absolutely no control over whether funds are going to be, you know, allocated for a new program, for a new bill like ours, which was, you know, Oregon's first ever historic rideshare protection package. I mean, you know, we have no control over that. But the things that we did and the things that we still do are coming out and making our voices heard, you know, building power and unity and just, you know, continuing to, you know, lean into our allies like Oregon Center for Public Policy, you know, Unite Oregon, you know, SEIU, Local 503, to name a few. I mean, a lot of these folks showed up really huge for us at our public hearing that we had, and, you know, just continuing to support us and help us, and, you know, mobilizing our workers and you know, making our voices heard. I mean, we packed, you know, we had an overflow room for our public hearing. I mean, we packed two of those rooms wearing our blue shirts. It was really empowering. And that's what our driver community is really, you know, embracing, you know, the fact that we have the power, you know, to change history, to see these changes that we want, you know, to happen. Martin Luther King is one of my favorite, you know, one of my greatest inspirations. And, you know, he said, you know, change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through continuous struggle. And, you know, combine that with my other hero, one of my other heroes, Frederick Douglass from my hometown. You know, if there is no struggle, there is no progress.
Speaking of the struggle, certainly one of the things that gives me the most hope right now in these sort of difficult times is that we have seen a lot of new energy in the labor movement. I wonder how you see the rideshare drivers and the drivers union fitting within this larger struggle of the labor movement. You know, it seems that if we are going to have an economy that works for everybody, we need to see a robust labor movement.
Yes, we need a robust labor movement. And Drivers Union Oregon, we're so proud. We're so proud to be a part of that. You know, we have, Joe and I have so many conversations with folks that are in other unions, and they're like, wait, there's a driver's union, rideshare drivers? You guys are organizing? Like, good, you know, go you, you know, good for you. Like, how can we help? You know, and it's this idea of solidarity. You know, we preach it all the time to our driver community. We, you know, we have, you know, been on the strike lines with, you know, IAM Local 63, the Boeing machinists when they were striking, you know, Oregon Nurses Association at Providence St. V's before they got their new contract. And, you know, it's been amazing to see the support that we've been shown as well in our fight.
So for the listeners who may want to get in touch with Drivers Union Oregon, or for other drivers who may want to get in touch, what can they do? Where can they go?
You can find us pretty easily. If you search Drivers Union Oregon, you can find our website, which is driversunionor.org. We are on all major social media platforms. If you're a driver listening to this, like, we are fighting for better pay. Come fight with us. If you are interested in joining our coalition or learning more, please contact us. We would love to have a schedule a meeting with you to discuss that more. And, you know, like, the last thing I would say is, you know, a lot of us use the service. I still take rides every now and again when I need them. You know, please share what you've heard here. You know, just talk to your driver. Tell them we have a union, Drivers Union Oregon. Like, drivers are fighting for better pay, and this is how we do it.
Thanks for listening to Policy for the People on KBOO Community Radio. Before we go, let me remind you to please help us reach our $45,000 KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive goal by showing your support today at kboo.fm/give, or by texting KBOO to 44321. Thanks, and we will see you next time.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio's annual